Blog Talk Radio.
People who were supposed to be his supporters, and Thomas Sankara, from what is known today as Burkina Faso, who was also assassinated by people who were supposed to be his supporters. But these people were men of justice, men of strong character, who wanted to see their people and people around the world be able to enjoy basic human rights. And I learned a lot reading these brothers' books while in solitary confinement. They helped to strengthen my ideology and get different perspective. So it feels good to be back. Hotel, peace to everybody who's listening. It feels good to be back. It's been a little bit of a trial over the last month or so. A lot's been going on. As you all know, I wanted to kind of discuss with you about kind of what are some of the things, adversities that I have been faced with, and we're going to make a connection between that and the overall struggle of the prisoner today in 2016 and the anti-democratic nature of this society, the prison society in particular. So with my particular situation, what happened was I was accused of being involved in a statewide work stoppage, not just being involved, but actually being a chief organizer. Apparently, there's a movement called the Free Virginia Movement that is calling for prisoners all over the state, and it's part of a larger movement calling for prisoners to engage in a work stoppage throughout the country. I didn't know this. I'm recently finding out about this, but somehow the warden at the last institution I was in was able to make an accusation that I was involved in that and transferred me. In the process of me being transferred, I was placed immediately in solitary confinement when I arrived here at Augusta Penitentiary Correctional Center in Craigsville, Virginia. When they sent me out here, they just put me in a hole. And didn't give me any explanation, just told me I was under investigation, never told me why, even though I had found out a little bit at Buckingham because of the support of all of the people out there who called to Richmond and various other places. They felt compelled to tell me that I was being transferred because of this alleged involvement in a work stoppage. But when I got here to Augusta, who was unaware that they had told me that, they were trying to remain secretive. So I stayed in the hole for 12 days, and basically was told at the end of the 12 days that, okay, you can go, you know what I'm saying? No explanation once again, no apologies. And when I came, being that I came from another institution, I didn't have any property initially, so maybe the first 5 days, it was some tough time. I was in there basically staring at the walls. I didn't have any books, I didn't have any writing materials. I had to get that from some of the guys, you know, in the prison. In the solitary work meeting, they had to basically smuggle them to my cell because the people were basically, man, people were basically being assholes. And it was all, you know, to me, it was all mysterious. I didn't know what was going on. And so that's essentially what I've been going through recently. The reality is the enemy is those who are people who are against the basic human rights and civil rights of all citizens in this country and in this world, because whenever we're not able to fully express ourselves as human beings, no matter where you are, that's a threat to humanity, right? So those who are enemies to our human expression, they never really punish you for nothing, right? So even though I may not have been guilty, per se, of what I was being accused of, I was definitely guilty of committing crimes in the eyes of the power structure. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that as we move forward, exactly about criminalization, crime, and its function. But one of the things that I wanted to start with is a quote that I wanted you all to kind of process and think about by a guy named Fyodor Dostoevsky. Fyodor Dostoevsky was a Russian writer, philosopher, who was a socialist, but really critiqued the Russian criminal justice system, who at the time in the 1800s, mid to late 1800s, was extremely repressive. And he made the statement that you can judge a society by how well it treats its prisoners. Again, he made the quote that you can judge a society by how well it treats its prisoners. Now, in order for us to really explore what he's leading up to with that, we have to ask ourselves, what is the basic function of America's political system, right? And it is supposedly to service democracy. You know what I'm saying? That is what it's supposed to do at the end of the day. This is a democracy. And when you start talking about democracy, there's some characteristics that are associated with every democracy, no matter where it's located on this planet, right? There's supposed to be free, open elections. There's supposed to be a free market economic system. There's supposed to be constitutions and the rule of law. You know what I'm saying? No authoritarianism. There's supposed to be independent judiciaries that are, that is, judges in a court system that is not beholden to any other branch of government because they were appointed or selected by them, but yet they do what is right. They make interpretations that are fair and just. They're supposed to be democratic. Societies are supposed to be responsive to the citizens of grievances and issues taken up with the government and other citizens. That is supposed to be the function of a democracy, you know what I'm saying? In contrast to totalitarian societies and where, you know, the citizens don't have any voice. The citizens don't have a say in what exactly the function of government is going to be, okay? So here we are in a society that runs around and parades itself as the leading democracy in human history, as the example of democratic values, okay? And yet, in this society, we have one of the most repressive criminal justice systems in the world. We have the largest criminal justice system in the world, one of the most anti-democratic criminal justice systems in the world. And again, Theodore Dostoevsky says, you can judge a society by how well it treats its prisoners. So let's begin to look at my situation, how I'm coming from the law library, seemingly going through an average day, and I'm told immediately by the floor officer at my housing unit, pack up. And I'm like, yo, pack up. You know what I'm saying? They're like, yeah, pack up, you're getting transferred. Now, there was no hearing. I was unable to speak and make a case for myself. I was unable to present evidence as to why it is that, you know, these claims were false. You know, it's just, yo, we control your body. You have no say-so. Pack your stuff up right now. We don't care about where you are or how hard you've worked to get in the positions you've gotten birthed into. Basically, you're a criminal, which in America, because of the 13th Amendment, translates into you are a slave. This is not me. This is the Constitution, 13th Amendment. And so because you are a slave, we will ship your ass wherever we want to do, wherever we want to ship you. We do what we will and what we feel with your body. And so I'm shipped across the state to a prison where I don't know any of the staff. I don't know what's going on. And I'm thrown immediately into an even more repressive environment, which is solitary confinement, which is basically being locked up while you're locked up. One of the most torturous, barbaric institutions still existing today. And America, once again, unlike any other society, uses solitary confinement more than any other country. This is a fact. Google it. One of the major issues that other countries who are claimed to be human rights violators that they hold up in the face of America is their use of solitary confinement. Solitary confinement is defined by most countries as torture. Okay? This is not me. This is the United Nations. These are groups part of the Security Council who have argued truth and nail with America about solitary confinement being torture. So here I am being sent across the state and thrown into what is essentially torture for false accusations without any means of being able to present a defense, to speak against it, to be able to have somebody look into my case. You know, like no way was I able to have any sort of fair hearing, my voice heard, anything. No democracy, you know, no democracy. So this calls into question the function of prisons in America. Because if we're in the leading democracy of the world, as it's presented to the world, how is it that you have an institution where democracy is null, is pretty much absent, where it doesn't even have any existence for real? You know, how does no presence? You know what I'm saying? How does that happen in a country that parades itself as the example of democracy? Well, the question has to be posed. What is the function of prison in America? And in order for us to really analyze that, we have to begin to understand the goal and the purpose of the corporation that we know as America today. The goal is to make profits for the wealthy and the rich in this country. I mean, America as a business, it is a corporation, it is incorporated, and as all colonies were, right? Its function is to make money for the people who established the nation and the descendants of those people. At this point, we're talking about the progeny, you know, years later, generations later, those people who still serve as representatives of the original original colonists and the original founders of this country. You know, so if the goal is to make profit and if the goal is to establish systems of profit, you know, controlling the means of production and exploit the resources, people being a resource, then we have to look at the function of prisons in America as being able to control populations so that populations do not become a threat to the overall goal and objective of making profits. Because that is the mission of any of all of the colonies, right? When Europeans were going to these different places and setting up colonies, they was looking for resources to exploit. They was looking for land to be able to build houses. They was looking for places to be able to basically make money, enhance their property ownership, and, you know, according to their value system, improve their quality of life. And so nothing has changed today. And so throughout society's changes, the criminal justice system has changed also. Early in the 1800s, it still was to function as a place to punish criminals, but then criminals were white, right? Because slaves really couldn't be looked at as criminals. Slaves were already criminalized for their blackness, right? So you didn't have slaves enter into prisons until after 1865. And before that, just, you know, basically whites flooded the prisons. But the goal is then to pretty much reform and use the prisons as a means to reform those who are committing crimes, stealing whores, and so forth and so on, and then release them. But after 1865, what we see is a completely different mission, a completely different objective, because now you have a whole bunch of people who were formerly enslaved being released into or being freed and being allowed to participate in civic functions of society. So now what you have is a large segment of the country who is racist, who fears this, and they begin to use the prisons, particularly in the South, as a way to control these populations, in a way to be able to continue to exploit their labor. So the convict leasing system is developed, and the prison now is serving as a function to maintain the black population, this newly freed black population, and can be able to control and exploit that labor. And this goes on and goes on and goes on, pretty much in functions like this all the way up into the mid-20th century, where the prison is now beginning to take on a different characteristic because of the infusion of prisoners' rights. But this is the result of people in society as a whole wanting to see complete change in their society. The Black Power Movement, Women's Rights Movement, all these various different movements is also trickling down into the prisons and causing the Prisoners' Rights Movement. And so where prisoners didn't have any rights, they're beginning to have rights, and prisoners' rights as a concept is beginning to be born. And so the birth of the concept of prisoners' rights leads to prisoners being given an abridged version of constitutional liberties. Not complete full liberties like those in society, but we're getting an abridged version. This is beginning to take place in the 1950s, all right, 1950s, 1960s. So now they're starting to say, well, yeah, they have a limited right to freedom of speech. Yeah, they have a limited right to freedom of association. Sure, they have a limited right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. Not the same as those in society, but they have a limited right. The courts is beginning to issue out these liberties to us and afford and give us these entitlements. But society is changing even more. And so now what happens in the 80s, you have a neoconservative, in the Reagan era, you have a neoconservative movement that's beginning to pick up steam, and the neoconservative movement is trying to take us back to a place where courts and society itself didn't think prisoners had rights, to, you know, so you have the victims' rights movement that's being used as a proxy for the neoconservative idea that, you know, criminals, which is a social construction, because none of us are born criminals, right? Like over in Afghanistan right now, in Saudi Arabia, it's a crime for a woman to drive a car, right? So the society creates the crime, which in turn produces the criminal. So these are social functions. So they're beginning to say the criminals are bad, they're evil, that is. But these are things that you are creating, you know, those in power. You create the criminal when you create the law and criminalize particular behaviors. And so what we see is a different function for the prison now. We see the prison serving a function to, once again, become centers of punishment and containment of surplus populations, because now what we're seeing is automation, digitization, outsourcing of jobs, less jobs, more people, you have an imbalance, and this is a threat to the power structure, because if we can't get jobs, ultimately we're going to start looking for those people who have the money and the wealth, and we're going to start to attract them. This is what they think. This is their fear. So the prison now serves as a function to control these populations. And so there begins to be a boom, a massive prison boom. And this is where you get the prison industrial complex and mass incarceration. And now you get, you know, surplus populations being incarcerated and criminalized. You start to see enhancements in drug laws, nonviolent crimes, mandatory minimums increase, and so forth and so on. Just here in Virginia, in the last 5 years, they've added 42 criminal offenses to the criminal code, and they're continuing to do so, thus creating more criminals. As you create more crimes, you create more criminals. So with that thought, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that on the other side. I'm going to take a break, play some music. We're going to add on, and we're going to make the connection between these authoritarian environments, my situation, and why it is we need to fight to end mass incarceration in the prison industrial complex. Hotel.
Thank you for using CTL.
Want to dedicate this joint right here. Jonathan Jackson and George Jackson. Peace to those brothers. Want to shout out my man Sharon the Worm. 80 years. Come on, nigga. Come on, niggas. Oh. I just burnt my American flag and sent 3 cracker Nazis to hell, and I'm sad. I'm loading tests in my mag to send these redneck bigots some death in the bag. Choke him out with his Confederate flag. I know these devils are mad. Little rat fans that live way out in safe suburbia, would you stand with me? A United States murderer, huh? Would you testify? You buy my songs. You buy my songs. But will you ride with me? You understand my struggle? That's what you claim, right? And get your aim right. And get your game tight. Throw by my songs, y'all don't roll with it. Coming to concerts, singing ho and shit. Fuck y'all little.
Hold up. I'll be back on the other side. So when we left off, we were talking about the prison, the function of the prison, and its primary function being to contain, control, and neutralize surplus populations. Surplus populations being those excess of people in our society who are unemployable, who basically have no role to play, because you have to keep in mind, man, that populations, people, like any other species resource on the planet, when too large, can threaten other species on the planet, right? There's an ecosystem that needs to be in balance. And so what we have become as a domestic society, as a domestic people, as we, you know, become more scientific, we've grown in certain places. We've gotten large, and in places, particularly very rich places, we have large populations like America. And America wasn't designed to have 330, 40 some odd million people in county running around, let alone at a time where wealth and resources are being concentrated more and more and more into fewer hands. Basically, there's less access to the resources needed for basic survival, because those who own are taking more and not redistributing, and this makes people more dangerous, because, you know, when a person got to eat to live and he ain't got no food, then he gonna do whatever the hell he got to do to get it. So the prison is beginning to function as a way to control these populations. So you see a massive prison boom, right, beginning in the early 90s. And it's enhanced. We know, I speak all the time about the crime bill, Bill Clinton and his initiative, alongside with his wife back then, our president-elect from the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton, supporting the crime bill, which basically incentivized states who adopted truth in sentencing laws. With those laws that say, you know, we're going to abolish parole in the state and we're going to get rid of good time. And so prisoners who get locked up whatever sentence they get, they're going to have to serve it. So if you get a 40-year sentence, you're not going to be eligible for early release until you do at least 37. You know what I'm saying? Where when there was parole, there was possibly you could get out at 13. And what this did is it created situations where people serve longer sentences, and within those prison systems, the prison systems became also more draconian and more authoritarian, because in order to manage these large populations, right, then you have to give almost complete freedom to the prison administrator to be able to manage and handle them in the way that they see fit, right? If you have a system that's growing, but the people are having more and more rights, which essentially equals power, then that would make these institutions and societies hard to manage. So you have to give the prison administrator carte blanche, if you will, you know what I'm saying? And this is what makes these institutions anti-democratic. And so this has been a neoconservative agenda, also a neoliberal agenda, because these people who run these societies, these powerful people, they are not short-term and short-sighted people. They are light years ahead. They are preparing to dominate the globe, and in their preparation for dominating the globe, they have to make calculations. They have to make assessments, you know what I'm saying? And so they make projections, 5, 10, 15, 20, and so they can see trends taking place within them certain demographics. They can see that the immigrant population is growing at this rate. They can see that the black population, the American African population is growing at this rate. They can see where there's potential threats, you know what I'm saying? And so some of the language and slogans that are used by these politicians who represent and serve as the interests of the rich are basically, you know, code language for a larger or more truthful situation that they're not really revealing to us. So let's use the immigrant, you know, anti-immigration slogans and rhetoric of people like Donald Trump. Donald Trump being one of the elites that I'm talking about, right? He's worth about $10 billion of the global economy. That's a large stake he has in the global economy, right, that belongs to him. $10 billion worth of the global economy is his. He owns that, okay? He's screaming out he's going to build a wall, you know what I'm saying, to prevent these excess population of people who, what are they going to do for him? They have no way to contribute to him enriching himself. They have no way to contribute to the corporation that we know as America enriching itself. All that they can do is come in the eyes of the wealthy now. I'm speaking from that perspective. All they can do is come and utilize resources, be a threat to my property and my person. They're not, because I'm not going to give them anything. I got $10 billion worth of ownership of the global economy, and I ain't giving them poor people nothing. You know what I'm saying? So he has to create the rhetoric. He has to create the division. He has to tell poor white people. He has to tell black people who are scrambling looking for jobs that these people are going to take their jobs. You know, these people need to be detained, right? Because a large segment of people being detained in this prison industrial complex is immigrants. They have immigration detention centers all over the country. A lot of people aren't aware of that. We focus a lot on the African and the American African population and their mass incarceration, but immigrants are mass detained and incarcerated also. This is happening on a large scale. You have whole prisons that are designed to incarcerate immigrants all over the country, particularly in the South. And these detention centers oftentimes are privately owned. You know what I mean? Just like the one down there in Mississippi where there was a prison riot recently and the officer was killed in a detention center where the immigrant population, most of them speaking Spanish, couldn't even speak English, were being abused and mistreated, right? And because they weren't in their country, nobody's watching, nobody's seeing. Very few people have the gaze to see what's happening on this prison. So this is the nature of the prison, you know what I'm saying? And so when it comes to people like me, people who live in these societies, we experience anti-democracy, if you will, daily. You get a charge, you go in front of here, and it just becomes a rote process. You just go in there just to get found guilty, just to be told what your penalty is. You can present all the evidence you want, but you already know the moment that the charge comes to your door that you're guilty. You know what I'm saying? The only first thing guys in here think when they get a charge is, man, should I take the penalty or should I go in there and talk to the lady and try to get a reduced penalty? And in no way do guys have the confidence that they can bring evidence and actually have a fair hearing. It's not even a consideration. It's not even a consideration. Guys don't consider whether or not they can go to certain staff and be open and honest about concerns. Maybe they have a cellie who they're not, a roommate they're not actually having a good terms with. They don't really feel like they can go tell the staff that they need a cell move unless they're going to go and tell the staff that they want to be a snitch. This is the nature of the prison. This is what we deal with on a daily basis. This is what you don't see. The abuses, the psychological abuses, the fact that you can be thrown in solitary confinement without any sort of due process, and the only thing you get at the end is, oh, man, I don't know what this was about, but you go into population today. No, it doesn't matter that I just went through 12 days of torture. That don't matter. You know what I'm saying? You got guys sitting on solitary confinement for years at a time. I did 2 years for a crime I didn't commit then. You know, I was innocent then. The officer said I threatened to kill him. I was at Red Onion. The officer said I threatened to kill him. I didn't. He wanted me to debase myself by getting completely naked, bent over, squat, spread my butt cheeks, and I refused to do that. You know what I'm saying? And so because he didn't like me refusing and disobeying his order, he lied and said I threatened to kill him. And I didn't have a hearing for that. They said I pleaded guilty. I didn't have a hearing. But this is the nature of the prison. So when you hear some of us who may seem a little resentful, a little bitter, and some people out there may say, well, you know, you guys have to just try to work with the system, and the system ain't that bad. And be humble that you commit some crime. It's kind of hard to feel remorseful when you see how illegitimate the prison is, the criminal justice system is, and those people who espouse all of this language like democracy and freedom. When they have these institutions who have particular functions, their particular functions are to service anti-freedoms. You know what I'm saying? Anti-democracy. You know, it's hard. You have to develop your own humanity to get beyond that. When you see a guy like Bob McDonald, right, the ex-governor of Virginia, who had robbery charges, who was basically giving rich people deals at the expense of poor people, it always is, and getting paid for it. When you see that he can spend $10 million, I just read this in the Richmond Times 2 days ago, when you can see that he can spend $10 million on a defense and basically be exonerated, meanwhile, you got a guy like my man I was just talking to, I haven't seen in years when I came up here, who sold drugs to an informant, and the agent sat there and let him sell drugs to this informant on four different occasions when they should have arrested him the first time, then gave him a charge for each time he sold to the informant over a two-week process, right, which seems like entrapment to me, and gave my man 20 years, okay? You tell me what's worse. And this is what the function of the criminal justice system is, just to allow people like Bob McDonald an opportunity to be exonerated with his $10 million of legal defense because he can pay that institution we know as the judicial institution. He can pay them $10 million, officers of the court, so he can get out. But those of us who are poor, who are selling drugs because typically we don't have the job skills, the labor skills, mainly because we come from dysfunctional families and we weren't properly serviced by the educational system. You know, they failed us, so we end up being drug dealers and robbers and things like that. We get life sentences. This is the function of the criminal justice system. We get life sentences, and then we're so-called truthfully sentenced, so we're not even allowed to redeem ourselves. And the reason all of this takes place is because the function of the prison is not to rehabilitate, is not to educate, it's particularly used to contain, again, surplus populations. And the idea is if we can neutralize them, if we can keep them from being a threat to our persons and our property, because we ain't got no damn jobs for them, and we ain't going to give them none of this $10 billion of wealth that I own in this economy. I ain't giving them none of this. So we got to figure out the way to contain them. And this is why I oftentimes describe prison as the new public housing. I love you all. Everybody who supports me and has continued to support me, thank you so much. We will go back to an hour next week. I just wanted to let you know I'm okay. Free all political prisoners. To all my peoples out there now, I love you. All the brothers at Buckingham, people like the Defenders, my man Latif Tariq, Zoe Spencer, all of you. I love you all, man. Miss Kay, Kat McNeil, everybody. Bill Willado, I love you all. My queens, everybody. I love you all. Thank you so much for the support. My mom, my family. And we just got to continue to fight, be involved in reform criminal justice. Freedom ain't free, y'all. Freedom ain't free. And posting ain't goddamn activism. You feel me? So let's get involved in the fight, man. Educate yourself for your political presence, man. I love y'all. Hotel.
Thank you